Well, good morning. Thanks for being here. You guys enjoying the conference so far? Wonderful. Let me begin by telling you kind of my story, give you a little bit of a narrative. Was anybody in the class yesterday, in my class that I taught at seminary? No, good, so I won't repeat myself. Let me give you our story, my wife and I and our two boys. We've adopted two boys after 12 years of unexplained infertility. The Lord allowed us to adopt two boys, both of them domestic, both of them private adoptions. Both of our scenarios are the extreme cases where everything that could go wrong does go wrong. And the ones you hear most about in the press, but really don't happen a whole lot. So I'll give you the extreme scenarios. So they get the most press because they're horrific, but they really, in reality, in the adoption scheme or landscape, don't happen that often. I'll begin with Aiden. He's now 7 years old, and Elijah's 1 year old. Aiden was adopted out of Leavenworth, Kansas, outside of Kansas City. In this particular case, we had a birth father who wasn't a dutiful dad. We had to terminate his rights. He was in prison, and so the court system provided him legal counsel free. He then moved into bribery and extortion. In other words, he didn't want Aiden. He wanted the money from us, and he was getting out within a month. That then turned into, in the process, into threats, calling all hours of the night, to the point when we went to finalize the adoption 3 months later, we had to have police escort because of the level that he had threatened us, and it was just crazy. But in the God's sovereignty, as David Platt mentioned, it worked itself all out. They lost my fingerprints, so we stayed in Kansas City because you have Interstate Commerce Act coming into play. They lost our fingerprints, and that left us probably an extra 3 weeks there waiting for the process to be concluded. So that was Aiden. He's seven. Everything's fine. She only asked for post-visits to be significant events in his life, contact, email, cards, Christmas, that kind of stuff. And like in most cases, she basically dropped off the scene. She was arrested shortly after that and has never given us forwarding address. So we send information about Aiden to the grandmother, but we basically don't have any contact with her, and he's not involved in the relationship at all. Elijah was last year, and that was about a two-week turnaround. So we got word. I came back from a trip on January 3rd, came in from preaching, pulled in the driveway. My wife met me at the car, which was kind of strange, and she said, "We have to make a decision right now. We've got to rock and roll and get this thing done if we're going to do it." And so we jumped in, and we did it in 2 weeks. So from the 3rd to the 17th, I guess, we were there when he was born. Both of them were infants. He was there when he was born. My wife was in the room, and so that's how the process worked for us. So that was a very fast adoption, and again, it was a private adoption through some friends. The second adoption included a reversal of the consent. So on Friday, we left the hospital with a temporary custody order. You had a 3-day cool-off period in southern Alabama. That's how they worked it in Alabama. And we checked in with her all weekend long. She was great. We're just updating on how Elijah was doing. On Monday, we get a call from the court system through our legal counsel, and they said return the baby. They've asked for the baby back. So at that point, we're having all of our bold statements challenged because we said philosophically, if a birth mother ever wants her child back, then we felt like we should return the child. Just feel like that would be the right thing to do. With Elijah, we were also confronted the day we arrived. We got a call and said that they're going to deliver 2 weeks early because of some medical complications, so we had to get there. We drove all night. It's like a 9-hour drive from here to lower Alabama into the Gulf Shores area. We arrived. We missed the birth by about 20 minutes. We walk in. Baby's full of the shakes, is on cocaine. She had done cocaine 3 or 4 days all through the pregnancy, but 3 or 4 days prior to this. So immediately our social worker confronts us, pulls us aside, and says, "You probably need to return home." And we said, "No. we trust the sovereign God will take any baby, special needs or not. And so we pressed through that. Elijah has no adverse effects. About 2 days, 3 days later, shakes went away. He's, as far as we know, perfectly normal. I mean, unless there's some behavioral thing or issue that comes up later on in life. But as of right now, nothing. So then they reversed it. So then you learn you have legal rights in an adoptive scenario that I didn't realize. And so our legal counsel says, do not return the baby. So now there's kidnapping charges for me. So I'm thinking, oh, Lord, here I am, senior vice president of Southern Seminary with kidnapping charges. So I've got to call Dr. Moeller and Dr. Moore and say, how do you want me to work this out? You know, because they're saying bring the baby back. Our legal counsel says no, because in that scenario, you learn that whoever has possession of the child is kind of in the driver's seat. And then you import, the social worker calls us, and we talk to her, and she says, if you return the baby, I'm going to take the baby because of the drugs. So DHR is going to step in. The baby's going to go into foster care. So that then changed all of my bold statements, because if you return the baby, you should. But all of a sudden, I learned about all these rights that you have, and you learn these things in the context of that and how to deploy the full length of the law. And so we didn't. We got our ducks in a row. We thought the baby's going to foster care. They could not take care of the baby. We have both birth mother and birth father involved. Matt and Tricia were 19 years old. And so we got all our ducks in a row. Meanwhile, they start calling us Monday, are leaving messages on our cell. They're calling our legal counsel. Well, we're not returning the calls because we don't know what they're asking or trying to find us. And we're in the same little town. So we're having to go out, like I sneak out at like 3 in the morning with a hat on, big glasses. I grow a beard, you know, and I'm just sneaking around having to get food late at night because there's kidnapping charges because we're supposed to return this baby, you know, and we're not. So I didn't want to be in public and didn't want to run into them because it was a real small town. And so meanwhile, on Monday or Tuesday, they had reversed their reversal. So they were trying to get in touch with us to say, you know, we made a foolish decision and we told the courts on Saturday we wanted the baby back. It was filed on Monday morning. That's when they called. So therefore, you could actually have the child. Well, we didn't know that, so we deploy the full length of the law. We say, we're going to fight this thing. That means we're going to live in Alabama for about 6 to 8 months until we get a hearing. You know, we're looking for places to live. We're going to set up camp. I'm going to drive back and work and then come back on the weekends. And just, it was crazy. And then many hours of walking on the beach praying and thinking through the process and what we're going to do. Finally, we get in touch with them. We get all our legal stuff together on Friday. We call them and they say, we actually want you to have the baby. He's like, ah, you know, the emotions are highs and lows. And so that starts another 3-day cool off period. You go 3-7-14 is in Alabama state law. So 3-7-14 meaning 3 days. And every time you get past one of those thresholds in a domestic adoption, it makes it more challenging on the birth parents to try to reverse it. So after the 3-day, they have to now prove something criminal about us for us to get the baby back. So you start moving through these legal processes and steps, and you learn all these things in the midst of that. So we experienced highs and lows emotionally. We experienced a reversal of consent, which is probably the most horrific thing that happens, you know, in a couple when you've had so much passion and so much desire. Now we've had possession of little Elijah for the 3 or 4 days. You know, you're really attached. You have kidnapping charges, escorts, bribery, extortion, and 100 awkward moments in the hotel, in the hospital. And it's always awkward. You have to know this because you have a mother, a natural mother, giving up her child, and it is awkward. So you've got their friends all visiting her, congratulating her, and then saying, who is this couple? And you're in the hospital room with them. It's creepy. And you just have to wrestle through it and push through it and work through it and be sweet and gracious and kind and try to be a ministry to them. Fortunately, in the Alabama case on Elijah, they gave us our own room, which didn't happen the first time, but they actually gave us our own hospital room. So when we had the baby would come in our room and they would go back to theirs, flying back and forth, and it was just weird. But you know, you're in a hospital room and you're not sick, so it's kind of like you're just hanging out, which is yucky in and of itself because hospitals aren't the greatest, but you know, you're trying to lay on the beds and sleep. It's just weird. But anyway, that's our story. So we had all of my bold, biblically informed statements were also challenged during those adoptions, and I had to question all that. I mean, in Southern Alabama, you got to understand that most of the legal work's done like at Denny's. I mean, it's like small town. I mean, we were like meeting our lawyer behind the 7-Eleven. You know, I'm coming in late at night at 11. I'm going, okay, what is he going to do? And he's like, okay, we're going to try this. We're going to go to the judge's house right now. I know him. His daughter babysits our kids. And we're going to go talk to him. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. So then the judge says no, so we go over her head. So now we've offended the court system, and she's going to be our final attorney on this deal to close down the adoption. And we're going to go over her head to her boss, and he gives us a temporary custody order. Now we've offended the legal system. I mean, it was just compounded, and it was just tough. And that's a huge part of the adoption process, not getting your hopes up, and really getting your theology in order and straight is absolutely crucial to the adoption process. So what I'd like to do to serve you best is just to kind of walk through a roadmap of domestic adoption. I want to leave a little time at the end. You can ask questions about our scenarios, or I can help serve you in any way or coach you, just to give you a little more experience, background. I also do coaching for adoption agencies whenever there's difficult circumstances or a young couple makes bold statements they didn't really mean. They call me, and I help them get out of that situation, because there's a couple things you can do in the middle of a home study that will send the flag right up, and that's where I come into play. And I kind of coach you through how to say things appropriately to a home study or to a social worker. So I also have the coaching experience on the one side, personal adoption. I've done two boys. Here's the wild thing. I'm really writing this Tuesday night. What's tonight? Hold on. No, Thursday night. Thursday night I'm writing this. We get an email. Hey, would you like to adopt another private adoption out of Indianapolis? Because the mom, through friends of ours, the mom only wants a biracial family. We adopt a little African-American boy. And so they only want a biracial family. And the other couple that was in the adoption process wasn't. And so the mom said, no way. And so here we are, dropping $500, getting the paperwork done. So I'm like working all Thursday night before the adoption conference. That's just how God works. You know, I've not gone through an agency before. We've always just done private adoptions. And I'll talk to you how you can deploy that as well here in a moment. But I thought I'd serve you best. That's kind of my experience. So if you have questions throughout the day, hopefully I can help you. And you got to know around here at Southern Seminary, all of us have adopted. So all of us in the executive team, you know, Randy's like adopted a bazillion. If he was here this morning, he'd turn one over in 24 hours, the last one. So he'd beat everybody, but he wasn't here, and I didn't see him in the crowd, so we were cool. But all of us, you know, except Dr. Moeller, and we're putting the pressure on, you know. We're kind of just needling him a little bit. And theologically, he's there, but you know, obviously, but you know, he's just a little older. So we're all getting old. But Dr. Moore obviously wrote the book on it. All of us, it's like everybody's adopted. So it's like in the DNA of the seminary and into the DNA of our staff. We're starting our own adoption fund to help support our faculty and staff as they want to adopt, and just trying to do some things as an employer to encourage this, to kind of set the tone. And so that's kind of our experience. That's our story. We're sticking with it. All right? Roadmap. Let me help you and serve you by talking through a domestic adoption roadmap. First thing you need to do is to get your theology in order. I just mentioned this. Let me just speak on this a little bit further, or elongate it a little more. You have to, in the adoption process, you have to preach the sovereignty of God to your family and to yourselves. I mean, every time you put your feet on the floor, you have to get up and you should preach the gospel to yourself. And a huge significant portion of that is the sovereignty of God in the process of adoption. Every single night in the midst of an adoption, and ours were tumultuous, we would pillow our heads on the sovereignty of God. So you have to predetermine to not get frustrated with the adventure of the Christian life, and with the drama that adoption brings to that. You will have ups and downs. You will go through a variety of emotions. You'll be interacting with birth moms and dads, and they will say something that will just be outlandish. And you've got to lean into the sovereignty of God. You've got to lean into Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath. I mean, you have to just lean into your theology. Your theology will be tested. And so first and foremost, we tell young couples, you need to get your understanding of the sovereignty of God. And I think this morning's message on Ruth, that God deals with he knows of every single molecule in this world and controls all of it without effort. That's our God, right? And so he does that, but you have to get that in your mind. We had to work through as a family. We had to work through our children an idol for us. You know, last little statement in 1 John 5:21, keep yourself from idols. We were wondering, well, maybe this is just a huge idol. Maybe we shouldn't be going down this path. So you have to search your heart. This is a searching process as well. You have to be patient and you have to persevere. You heard all of that. I don't want to repeat Dr. Platt's message, but that's the gist of getting your theology straight. I know it's a cliche that you have to trust God, but it's a cliche because it's true. You have to trust God. You have to lean into the sovereignty of God, including finances, including your theology, including guarding your hearts, knowing when to release, when not to release. So make sure that you have your theology in order. That is absolutely foundational to an effective adoption process. Had we not had a high view of God, as soon as we walked in and were confronted in the face with a stiff wind of cocaine, we probably would have said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's going to be huge medical bills. We're in the ministry. We don't have money. This just comes with the ministry. We're all broke. It's part of it. We'll get rich in heaven. Move on. So if we didn't have all that perspective and theology just ringing and resonating in our hearts and surfacing all the digging and discovery of God's word and training that I've been through, if I had not had that, we would have been a mess. We would have been just on our own like the wind being tossed to and from. So the roadmap begins with getting your theology in order. Second, you need to assess your family's will. Assess your family's will, or put your family's will in order. And by that, I'm not talking about a physical will at the end of your life. I'm talking about you have to predetermine how far you will go in the adoption process. You have to predetermine that, because in the heat of the moment, it'll be too tough for you to figure out. And the reason why, when we were slapped in the face with the cocaine or slapped in the face of a 6-month legal battle, we knew we would do whatever it take. We had already predetermined we were going to take any baby, special needs or not. We knew that we'd deploy the full, you know, our full resources, as limited as that may be, our full resources. So we had to predetermine that. We also had to predetermine our will towards a biracial child living in the South. What are people going to look at us funny? When we're walking around, it becomes pretty obvious, you know. Oh, who's this, you know? You got two pasty white people, you know. I mean, it just becomes real obvious. So you got to work through that whole process of your will. Where are you willing to go? What are you willing to do? One of the benefits of domestic adoption, you usually have a family history, you know. But if you're going to do something like an international adoption, you won't get a lot of family history. And that family history can be messy. And all of a sudden you start reading this family history and you're going, oh my goodness, it's like a circus. These people are crazy, you know. And you're thinking, is our child going to be crazy? And so you have to sort through all that, because you see things and you read things in the midst of the process and you're thinking, oh man. So you need to, second, assess your family's will towards adoption. Where are you willing to go? How far are you willing to go? Third, you need to research your options. You need to research your options. Each option that is laid before you has strengths and weaknesses. They're not all clean. They're not all smooth. Now, I would say the vast majority of domestic adoptions are pretty simple, less expensive, pretty simple. But there are a few extreme cases. I just happen to have all of them in our life and marriage. And I just go back to, it's 1 Corinthians 10:13. God will not give you more than you can handle. You know, so again, I lean into my theology. I look at the life of Job, and God just said, hey, have you heard of Job? So when it comes to adoption, I think he's going, hey, have you heard of Dan and Jane? They'll take a beating. Look at them. You know, they're a good whipping post, and they'll model difficult adoptions for you. But you know what? 2 Corinthians 1 says, you go through the things of life so that you may counsel and shepherd other people with the things that you learn. In other words, I am sensitive to and can come alongside empathetically and practically and personally because I did go through all that. So in the midst of the tumultuous time, I'm thinking, what in the world? But afterwards, it yields this peaceable fruit of righteousness that you can then take and help other couples with in this process. So your options. What are your options? Private adoption is one. You'll need an attorney in a private adoption. It's just not you going down and grabbing the paperwork at Office Depot and kind of filling out a contract. You'll need an attorney who specializes in adoption. When you do a private adoption or a domestic adoption, make sure that it's not just an attorney that you know tinkers with it, but is an authority on adoption. My legal counsel in Alabama was brilliant. I didn't understand half the law. He knew he could deploy, and he would systematically deploy the legal options that we had. You know, didn't throw it all at us at once. He just systematically deployed it as it came up and as we needed it. Now, I didn't realize we had rights, that we had a temporary custody, and so we were in the driver's seat in this deal. I would have not assumed that, but he said, no, you totally are, and you're protected, so this could get messy, but, you know, in the end of the day, you can still take this couple to court. It'll take some time, and you possibly can win. Now, the courts usually side on the birth mother. You need to know that, but it's possible you can do that. Now, I couldn't do that if I like your kids, just go up and take them and say, hey, I'm going to take your kids away from you. It's only rights in the context of adoption itself. So you have private adoption. You have foster care adoption. Typically, they're older children, not a lot of infants. And foster care adoption is a lot of emotion because there's an uncertainty that creates a distance. You know, you're not sure, you know, if it's going to go through. And so if you're doing foster care, it just takes time, as Dr. Moore says. But they're typically older children. You can use an agency domestically here and receive good medical history. They do all the heavy lifting and all the work. You pay for that. You know, it's expensive. And they have a business model that they use. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's kind of like mission agencies. Sometimes I look and I'm like, man, you know, you have to deploy all these resources. And if you've gone through a home study before, you're kind of going, you know, that's not worth. My first one was like $3,000. I'm like, those couple of visits, that's a lot of money. You know, it kind of frustrates you a little bit, and you have to work through that. So we just chose to use an agency for the home study, like an a la carte, but not for the whole process. You have international adoption, probably not going to get family history, a lot of family history. It can be faster. It has a greater Great Commission impact in the world to the nations. It can get shady if you do international adoptions. I mean, you're going to be bringing some extra cash alongside. It can get a little squirrely there. You also have as an option to you embryo adoption or snowflake adoption. You probably have heard of that, the adoption of frozen embryos where the adoptive parents experience the pregnancy, kind of a snowflake adoption. The key is this. Whatever option you choose, you need to ask a lot of questions. You need to do a lot of research. So if you use an agency or legal counsel, you're looking for recommendations, you're looking for licensing, you're looking at how many children they placed last year or the last 3 years, what criteria does the agency use to match children with the families, what's their grid that they're pushing through the criteria. You want to ask for references of parents. Always call references. References will be God honest. And they'll tell you if there's some issues or some pitfalls that you need to be aware of. But you need to do your diligence. You need to research your options and then decide as a family, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Are we going to do private, foster care, domestic, international, embryo? Whatever that is, you have to do your homework. And the internet is a marvelous tool. People who have done adoption is a marvelous tool. You can email us. You can email Dr. Moore. And we have people all the time. We're doing this all the time, interacting with them, helping them, kind of coaching them in direction. Okay? Number, what is it, 4? Own the whole process. You have to, in this roadmap, own the whole process. So that means in your home study, understand a home study. They're not just looking at, they're primarily not looking at the safety of your home. They're more looking at the philosophy of your parenting, your maturity, where you're at. Are you able to handle your financial picture? Are you able to support a child? So understand, a home study, they're not just looking under your covers to see if you have Ajax in a reachable place. I mean, they don't even do that. Well, they didn't with us anyway. They're not about that. They're looking at paperwork. And this means you've got to own the whole process. You've got to have your paperwork always in order, always up to date. And I would recommend that you keep an active home study. That's what we do. So once you've done a home study, you can pay a fee annually, and they just kind of update it annually. So if a child comes, you save yourself all that heavy lifting. And if you do a home study and it goes dormant, just make sure you save all that stuff. You know, you make a killer file, because you go through a ton of paperwork on that first one. And what I'd recommend you do in just the roadmap right now, go home as a family and put everything in order. If you're even praying about adoption, just go home, because it should be, it's a good responsibility to do that anyway. Just as a discipline of the leader in the home, I have what we call a life notebook. And everything, our insurance policies, bank accounts, passwords, everything is in a single notebook in a safe in our house. And my wife knows if I get in a plane crash or something happens, she can go to that and she can exist. Everything, passports, birth rec, everything is in that single notebook. And so that's how we do it. We call it our life notebook. And that's also the same notebook that we use for adoption, because they're going to ask you all those kind of questions. So your paperwork, you're going to do paperwork. And after you do a little bit of paperwork, you're going to do a little more paperwork. And after you do a little more paperwork, you're going to do even a little more paperwork. That's part of this owning the process. Average home study takes, 3 to 6 months. So that classes you attend, the paperwork you turn in, all that kind of stuff. The whole process, you have to file a petition to adopt, giving you temporary legal counsel. Your legal counsel will coach you on all this, but when you deal with domestic, sometimes it gets a little squirrely in different topics. But after a period of time, you'll appear before a judge and make the adoption permanent, and you want an attorney at all of those. So you kind of have this home study process, a petition to adopt, and then the final hearing is what they call it. And you go before a judge, and he asks you to swears you in and asks you that you'll take care of the child. And then you'll typically have what we call post-placement visits from the adoption home study process. They may have you read some things. They follow up. Social Security cards, make sure you do that. We oftentimes the birth mother will fill the paperwork out wrong in the hospital, and you have to go get those Social Security cards, and that makes it cumbersome. Your insurance on a domestic, just so you know, is the day you take possession in temporary custody, your child goes on your insurance policy. So at least that's been my experience with our two policies in two different places we've had. Immediately, the insurance company just sees adoption. They're used to it, and they immediately put the child on your insurance policy when you leave the hospital that day. Up until the end of the hospital visit, once you leave, then they go on your policy. The hospital's taking care of it, the child before that. Also in the roadmap, pray like crazy. Next step, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. We heard about James this morning. Do you believe it? Then practice it. Paul said to Philippians, be anxious for nothing. And it's tough. You will get anxious. You gotta constantly resist that. And just understand, in adoption, spiritual warfare gets intense. It just really gets intense. And maybe it's just more my experience or not. But I'll tell you, we were always on our knees, always praying. It's a wonderful discipline to have in your marriage anyway. But especially, you elongate that time, and you really need wisdom from the Lord and need to be praying. Next, go public with your intentions. How did we do these private adoptions? That's always the question. Like, how do you get private adoptions set up? I mean, if you get one, it's quick, because once you know, there's not all the agency, and you're not filling out a portfolio and describing who you are. It's just you go out to dinner with them. Basically, you fly in and go to Applebee's like we did and meet the gal and her dad and her mom and talk to them, and that's how it went. But the way I feel that this happens most often is by going public, meaning you tell everybody you're interested in adopting. So you use everything at your disposal, social media, Twitter, Facebook. You just tell people, hey, we're thinking about adopting. If anybody hears anything, praying. You tell your church, you tell your spiritual leaders in your church, you tell your elders, and you go to them and say, hey, we're as a family, we're considering this, we'd love to do this. You tell everyone, and then watch God work. He makes families, right? He's going to make families. He will bring out of nowhere. And it's happened for us now. This is the third one. And we're not using an agency. We're not using anybody. We're just saying, God, we'd like more children. If it's in your will and it's in your plan, we know it's not an idol to us. We've worked that through our hearts. Please open doors of opportunity. You're like huge. You control every molecule. So certainly he can work this out. I'm not saying don't use an agency. I think that's a viable option. I think you should. You know, I'm just saying for us, that's just how it's been. Now, we were in a large church. That aids. I'm not saying leave your church to go to a larger church, but don't misunderstand me. But we were in a church of 7,000, so we were just telling everybody. We were telling the pastoral team. I was on that team. I was the executive pastor there in Los Angeles, and so we're just telling everybody about our desire to adopt. I'd also pursue good coaching. You know, you come to a conference like this, you meet people, you build relationships, you forge these friendships, you know, go to good coaching. You know, Proverbs says in Proverbs 18:1, he who isolates himself is a fool. So you need coaching in your life. Your marriage needs regular coaching. I'm just a huge proponent of this. And I think also with adoption, just tell everyone. Also talk to the people who are living it. Talk to the Jason Kovacs of the world and just, you know, talk to Show Hope and talk to all these people. Go to the booth today and say, hey, you know, give me some idea. Coach me. Help me research and look and find and pray and pray like crazy for that. So go public with your intentions. That's a huge part. This is huge. Next, get your economic house in order. Get your economic house in order. Be honest with the cost of rearing a child, but don't let it deter you. We're commanded by Luke 14 to consider the cost. You know, what kind of builder goes out and doesn't consider the cost and just tries to throw up a structure? It's crazy. Nobody does that. Jesus said, you need to consider the cost. The average cost of raising a child from 0 to 18, $250,000. So adoption is a small portion of that. Don't worry about that. And don't panic about the adoption cost, because they don't ask you to lay out all that cash up front. It's deployed throughout the process, which usually typically is kind of long anyway. But don't get discouraged on that. It's usually the greatest question we have, like, how do you deal financially with it? There are the ABBA funds. There's Show Hannah's Hope. There's all these groups that do matching. Maybe you can help start a fund in your church. You can go to your employer. We'll talk about that in a second. Average adoption domestic ranges from 7 to, I guess, 30, you know, if it's an extreme legal case. Aiden was 17,000, and Elijah was only like 8, because we only had to deploy some legal counsel right in that one little week. And then you're talking to your lawyer, you're always panicked. You're like, all right, here's what you do, because he's going by the minute, you know. She's like, I'll meet you at the door, you know, as fast as I can get off. But then, like, 1 minute goes to, like, an hour automatically. So they get you either way, you know, and you'll just learn to hate lawyers. Are there any lawyers in here? You'll learn to despise them because they make so much money off you. But so the costs don't happen all at once. Typically, they're looking for couples, just an agency kind of work domestically. They're looking for couples under 40, married for at least 3 years and are financially stable. That's the general bar. Changes from state to state. That's why when you do a roadmap like this, it's kind of hard because the law changes. You know, California was extreme. For example, listen to this. In California, we had our legal counsel. We had to have a lawyer in California. We had to have a lawyer in Kansas City. Aiden had to have a lawyer in Kansas City and a lawyer in California. So we had 4. And it's like a meter. You know, it's like going out and looking at your watts meter on your house. I'm just going, ah! You know, I'm trying to fight this thing and stave the cost. But that was my job, not to panic, but try to hold the fort down. I think also a part of this roadmap, do you have any restricting debt? Something that would inhibit you. And it's just our general philosophy of life for our family that we always want to be in a position of being sendable. You know, if God, in other words, calls us to the mission field, we don't want to have restrictive debt. So we work hard at keeping our character intact because we're in the ministry and it's a character profession. So I always keep my character intact and our finances intact so that we can do anything we want to do. If God says you're going to India and you're going to be a strategic church planter in India and minister to orphanages, then we're gone, you know. And I think by having your home in order, that also opens up the door. Like yesterday, we get a call that night. Immediately, before you have a first conversation, they say, send us a check for $500, you know. But if you never have a savings account or you're out living outside your means, then you just can't do some of those things. And so the first question is, how are we going to do this? My wife didn't even have to ask me. She's just cutting a check. You know, here's the credit card number. You know, we pay it off every month. Hopefully. Yeah, we do. So no restrictive debt. That's all a part of getting your financial house in order. Here's your financial options. You can have adoption subsidies by government. That's in the foster care, so you can get subsidies for that. loans and grants, like Shohanna's Hope. That would be an example. I was in the foundation when they established that. I worked with Stephen Curtis Chapman. He flew into L.A., and we sat down at CPK and kind of worked through Shohanna's Hope, the concept there. An adoption-friendly employer. You can go to your employer and ask them for some financial help. Military, if you're in the military, anybody in the military? Domestically, military, yes. Military is a good option. Active duty provides $2,000 per child for a total of $5,000 a year for adoption if you're in the military. I wouldn't necessarily say join the military for that. It'll cost you more than you want to pay. And then you understand the IRS tax credit for qualifying expenses. Do you understand that? I need to speak to that a little bit. The Bush family had adoption in it. They initiated actually out of Kentucky here, right down on, this is Lexington Road. Our state senator lives about 8 houses down, and she brought the adoption bill forward, this adoption credit. And basically what that is you have, it's right now at 12,000, I'm looking for my notes, I forgot what the number is. 12,150. So that's an actual credit to your taxes. So whatever dollar you pay in, okay, they deduct that. So in other words, you're going to deploy, if you deploy $12,000 in adoption expenses, you'll get $12,000 back in tax money. So it's an actual credit. It's not a deduction. It's an actual credit. And say you don't make enough money to have that to deploy that much taxes in a year, then you have up to 5 years to use that in the year that the adoption is finalized. So you have 5 years after that. So please understand this. You can borrow money, family, whatever, knowing that you'll get that back in taxes. So if you paid in $7,000, they're going to kick you back out of your taxes $7,000 at the end of the year. So this is a huge benefit for adoption. A lot of young couples and families don't grasp that. So you couple, like your church helping you, maybe some family, a little bit of savings you have, and this credit, you still have to deploy that money out, you know. But you'll get that money back. They're going to be qualifying expenses. You know, you don't get the $12,000 back. You see what I'm saying? You get what you spent. Expenses out of your pocket. Travel, hotels, whatever those qualifying expenses are. And there's a list at the IRS site of what they are. But your legal fees. So, question. Yes, I'm hoping it does end this year in 2010, but I'm hoping that they're going to do something. At least they'll go back to the smaller bill. But yes, it is up for, it expires this year. So, but Ann Northrup, which lives right, you know, 5 houses down, is the one that kind of brought that through in the Bush organization to ratchet that up a little bit. So that was huge. Any other questions back there? Same question, yeah. So what they're trying to tell you is adopt now. Yeah. But, pardon? Right. I also, when it comes to the financial picture, I mean, it gets expensive, but it's worth every minute of it, every penny of it. I mean, don't let that deter you. You know, you just lean into the Spirit of God. God, like, owns everything. You know, he said he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He's, like, rich. You just beg him. You know, say, God, this is our desire. You know, we searched our hearts, please. And my first adoption, the church stepped up, gave us a couple thousand. A family stepped up. I mean, so out of the 17, we had 10. You know, so that works out on all cases. Like Dr. Moore's, if you read his book, you know, someone just walked in his office over here and gave him 10 grand. I mean, God just provides. That's why you want to go public, see? You want to tell everybody, because everybody says, hey, how can we help you? How can we serve you? We're 55 years old. We're not going to adopt any more kids, but we're like flush with cash. I mean, God's blessed our company. You know, we would like to help you. And so that's why you go public, all right? God will provide through others. Now, for you guys, that's humbling. So don't be arrogant. I didn't like taking money from people. You know, I want to be the provider for my home. You know, that's what I'm supposed to do biblically. So, but it's humbling, but you need to learn to receive that gift from people because they're doing it out of obedience. And so you're robbing them of a tremendous blessing. Complete your home study is next on the roadmap. We talked a little bit about it. This should be, just understand the reason behind home studies. It should be a deliberate and substantive process, and that's to protect the orphans. Okay? It's looking out for the kids. They're not trying to just run you through the mill to wear you down. They're trying to protect the children. Request a written itemized agreement of all fees up front. So there's sticker shocks up front. Remove the surprises. Understand in a home study, there's often going to be a clash of worldviews if you're a believer. You're going to clash with those worldviews. There's often a clash of scriptural principles. Each state is totally different. And remember, the home study is a part of your greater sanctification. It's God conforming you to be more like Jesus Christ. This can be expedited for a fee. They typically range from $1,000 to $3,000. I paid $3,000 in an a la carte situation for Aiden because it was expedited. But you can get it done. If you get a quick adoption, just know there are people out there that will get it done for you. And it's just going to cost you a little more. This is not a white glove inspection. They're looking for a healthy home. Keep an active home study, those things that I mentioned before. But complete your home study is next in the roadmap. Now, watch out for landmines in your home study. What are the two big landmines in a home study? Anybody know what they are? Right, discipline and firearms. Okay, so I like watched Wolverines when I was a kid. So I have a lot of firearms. I'm a hunter, gatherer, killer. Y2K, kind of stocked up a little bit excessive there. So I have a lot of guns. So we knew to get coaching there. So they're going to ask you, do you have firearms on the property? If you do, it's going to raise a red flag. You know, just know it's coming. They're just going to ask you, hey, do you have any firearms on the property? And you're like, yeah, I got a lot, you know. So I removed all my firearms from the property, knowing that question was coming. And sure enough, it came and it went. And they don't ask you if you own any firearms. They just have you have any on the property. And that was fortunate. And in both cases, that was the case. The other one is discipline. And that's where the biggest red flag comes. They're going to ask you, what do you plan to do? You're going to give you a scenario, you know, kind of a case study. What are you going to do about this? And you need to make sure you have your language down on this. You know, you basically are going to say that we believe in age-appropriate forms of discipline, like restriction, like removing privileges, like going to bed early, those kinds of things. And you throw a barrage of options at them and try to avoid the spanking. Because as soon as you say that, the average social worker, red flag goes up, and that's when they call me to kind of walk you through this process. Now, you're not compromising by doing that. You do believe in that. You're just saying there are a variety of things because you're not going to spank an 18-year-old. You know, there are going to be age-appropriate things. So you look at the options that they buy, and you don't bring up the spanking. You know, and if they bring it up specific, and they might, then you just kind of walk through that process with them. Say, you know, it's possible we would do that. You know, it'd be appropriate, attention-getting. You know. You want to steer away from the biblical language. Now, I'm a biblicist, so I love the biblical language. I find really no compelling reason to move away from the way God wrote his word and described things. But in some cases, like using the term the rod, probably is not the most appropriate, okay? I'll give you a story. My best friend, Rick Holland, in Los Angeles, we're in San Diego, and one of his boys acts up, and he called it the rod. And so he says, listen, before we go to dinner, I'm going to go run upstairs and deal with Luke. Well, Luke freaks out at the threat of discipline, and he starts screaming because he's already in a fit and got in trouble. And he starts screaming, no, not the rod, not the rod. He gets on the elevator. We can hear him go up the elevator, not the rod. The whole elevator's full of people, and he's crying, and his dad said, you know. So you just, you know, you call it like candy. You know, you're going to get candy, you know, if you do that. So just I don't typically steer away from biblical language, but in this case, let me coach you a tad and just say, be careful of that age-appropriate discipline there. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, just know that they're going to say things real fast, and they're just kind of getting you in narrative, talking to you. Yeah, what about that? What are you going to do about this? And all of a sudden, you said something. You know, in that situation, I would have a problem taking my kid to a mosque on a field trip. You see what I'm saying? I'm going to, you know what I mean? There's, you know, I hate to be Bill Clinton-esque here, but, you know, you're going to say things that are going to, well, you got to just quit. You got to be on your feet, you know, and kind of like I told Jane, I'm doing the topping, because she kind of panics, you know, in those kind of questions. Like, she's not used to congressional hearings, and I live on an executive level, so I'm like, I'll talk. You know, and I have to go hold because I could see her wanting to jump in, like hold, you know. So, yes, I'm just, there's all kinds, but these are the two big ones, and they're definitely going to go there. I've not heard of that one. That's, yeah, I didn't have that. Yeah. 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 And oftentimes the social workers, they can even be a Christian agency, but, you know, what level of Christianity they're at, you know what I mean? Like, their depth, or they weren't raised around spanking, and so, you know, and you want to be, you know, I'm going to be faithful to the scriptures, I'm going to do what God says, but, you know, there is age appropriateness, and there's excessive, and again, their position is to protect the child, so they don't want, you know, they don't want to give that child up, someone's going to abuse the child, and you hear all the horror stories, and that's what they live in. They're a tad bit jaded, because that's their industry, you know, just like a police officer. You know, if you're a police officer, you see crime all day long, and you come home to your sweet wife and kids, you know, you're a little tense sometimes, you know, relax, bro, you know, everything's going to be okay, you know, this is home, you know, so you have to adjust for that. Yes, ma'am. Then I would sign that I would, and then I'd have to figure out the consequences. Yeah. What if the state requires you to sign something that you will not use corporal punishment? You know, and that's where it could be moving towards for sure. I mean, it's not getting any easier, you know. So adopt this year. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they talked to Aiden, my 7-year-old. Now, they were appropriate questions, you know. Why do you want a little brother? Why do you want, you know, that kind of thing. But, yes, they will interview them. And typically, sometimes when you're not around, sometimes when you're around. So, but, you know, I mean, yeah, they could ask about discipline. And if your son goes, oh, my dad goes, he can whip like way better than mom. That would be my son, because as hard as my wife tries, she's just not the strongest gal. You know, she's not as robust, you know, can't put a licking on. And I'm of the opinion, you know, swift, aggressive, not 100 of them. She's like more into, you know, aerobic discipline. I'm into swift to the point, if they can breathe afterwards, you know, there's a problem. And you only do that a few times, and they go, oh, gosh, Dad's home, you know. Or they bring him to the office, which is even worse. But So, they're going to interview. So, yeah, you have to you coach your kids a little bit and say, look, you know, because they're just being kids. They're just going to say, oh, yeah, Dad is, like, out of control, man. He puts, it's like a big old welt on my butt, you know. So you need to coach him a tad. But so, and I always, when you get a social worker, I always do a little research on them as well. Who am I dealing with? What's their personality? What's their background? The one in Kentucky here was a seminary wife of a student. So that was helpful. She had a lot of biblical context. She knew us. She kind of knew, you know, she knows here. She knows my role. In other words, my character is going to be intact because I'm an executive at the seminary. So, you know, I mean, it's all about character. All we do is train pastors. We got to have our character intact, you know. So she's going to assume some things. She asked, but I mean, she's going to assume some things there. So economic, oh, wrong side, home study, you have that, watch your landmines, be patient and not demanding. You just have to know in the adoption process, you're not in the driver's seat. And like, I'm real buttoned up and I like control everything, you know, which is a sin, you know, it's challenging and always a point of confession for me. But there are just lots of awkward moments in the birth mother and birth father, if they're involved, they're in charge. And you can't be demanding you because you could just tick them off the wrong way and they'll just shut it down. They have that right. Everything leans into their rights, not yours in this process. So, you know, you just have to, if you're a controlling family and a controlling person, then you just kind of have to, whoever's not, let them be in control of you and be patient and not demanding. God's put it in a woman's heart to be a mother, and she's going against that natural God-given desire, and that's going to be emotional and extremely difficult. These last kids we were dealing with are 18, 19, irresponsible. I mean, there's so many times I want to take that boy out and say, let's go for a walk in the hospital garden. You know, I just want to, because I'm a pastor, I'm a shepherd, you know, I just want to go and put my arm around him and say, listen, bro, here's what you need to understand about life, you know. But I couldn't, you know, and you're not in control. You have to be patient. Deploy the full arm of the law. Birth parents have rights, but adoptive parents have rights. And you may never encounter the full length of that. That's why good legal counsel is worth its weight in gold. You have to wrestle with open adoptions and visitations. Both of ours, in Aiden's case, they wanted just information at special occasions in his life. In Elijah's case, they didn't have legal counsel. They used our legal counsel, and so we didn't even bring up the option. And it was never discussed, and there was nothing in the paperwork. So we have no obligation to them whatsoever, other than she signed and checked a box saying that Elijah can have access to the knowledge of who she was at 18. So that's the only thing we have there. But that can be a deal breaker. You know, if you're in the same town, and the gal says, I want to see him every weekend, and Thursday nights I want to do pizza night with you guys, and you're going, that's a problem. Because God's making a new family here, so it's very tenuous. You have to wrestle through that. You see, adoption's not shared custody. It's the creation of a whole new family. And so you have to really wrestle through the open adoption issue. Don't bring it up unless they bring it up. Or watch the paperwork. Their legal counsel, if they have it, could be giving them direction. You know, it's going to be demanding. Sometimes the social workers, they lean into the parent's side. They're being sweet to you, but they're also there to protect the birth mother. And I remember in Elijah's case, she kept going and saying, listen, sugar, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to do this. And I'm like, she's trying to untalk her out. I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't really do this. You know, I'm trying to, you know, you're back and forth because you're so passionate about it. It's just awkward. Just weird, awkward. So thoroughly read your paperwork. Our experiences, they kind of desire more up front than they probably actually want because of the emotions of it. They're thinking, you know, they're trying to extrapolate that out. Both of our birth mothers have disappeared, no contact. And same with the birth father. So that's been our experience. So we weren't going to be too demanding if Tricia and Matt wanted certain things and we were going to say, okay, we'll accommodate. But we're in another state, too. If they want to come visitation, they got to drive 10 hours. They don't have two nickels, you know. They're living in a car, literally. So I guess I could drive, but give honor to whom honor's due. You need to honor the birth mother. So if you say you're going to do things like send a card, then send it. We're doing our packet up right now. We always do it the first of the year kind of thing. Jane's does pictures and video and just sends them on, and whether they're seen or not, we do because we want to honor her. The birth mother, you just have to remember biblically and perspectively, that the birth mother could have aborted that child. She had that as an option. So we really honor our birth mom in anything they request and have need for. Stay engaged in orphan care. Last, by coaching others, don't let your experience go dormant. You know, God's given you a certain experience. Use it. Keep an active home studying. Be generous. So if you're getting to the age where you're getting old like me, you might want to be generous in helping other couples that are trying to adopt. And don't forget to minister the gospel with tact. Now, this is a sticky wicket, because if you come too hard at them with the gospel, they will read that as condemnation. You're condemning, because typically they're having a child out of wedlock, you know, and they're going to read that as condemnation. So what I advise you to do, if at all possible, you would deploy somebody around them, a church or somebody, to get them in contact with, would do all that follow-up. Because I'm a pastor, I'm a preacher, and I wouldn't shy away from the gospel, but I had to be very tactful, very gracious, very kind. You know, Kim's having a baby. She's got all the emotions going on in her body. I remember we're sitting in a hotel room. I'd pray with her, love on her, tell her what we're like, because we had that time in the hospital waiting for the delivery. Just tell her what we're like as a family, what are priorities to us, what we love, and that kind of thing. And then we turned them over to a church there, and they followed up and cared for them and ministered the gospel further. And same thing with Elijah. It was through a pastor, a friend of mine anyway, and so they knew the family, and they took them. And so that was kind of our experience there. Any questions? I know we're going to have to go to lunch here, but I want to answer any questions or serve you in domestic adoption out of my experience. Yes, ma'am. I don't think there's any legal thing against the fund. I mean, I think you just have to be honest and open, whoever's doing your deputization and processing and cares for you. Are you with an agency or IMB? Or? Okay, yeah, so I would go to them and just present that to them and let them think through that ramification, but just being honest up front. International going domestic, I know that two of my friends are doing that right now. They're international, and they're doing Snowflake out of Los Angeles, coming back, doing the hormone treatments, the whole deal. And they vetted that through our agency that we had in our church, and they said that was okay, and it that seemed to work out. I think it might be a little bit easier if you're international to do international in the country you're in, but if you want to do domestic, then or it may be a closed country, then I think you'd have to contact a few agencies or talk to, you know, in the Heritage Hall. I'd go by a few of the agencies that are in there and just say, how does that work? I don't have any personal experience with it other than I know the Snowflake works. That's a little bit different scenario than in-country domestic, in interstate and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not as versed on that. Sorry. Yes, ma'am. Well, it depends if you have a child, you know, come on the horizon. I mean, yes, you want to get, like I said, you want to get your home in order. I'm not sure that would be a deal breaker, you know, because again, they're not looking so much at the structure of the home. Yeah. I mean, I would just bring it up with the home study folks. You know, there's probably someone here, you know, that does home studies, you know, in one of the agencies, and just ask them. That, you know, it's kind of like you have free advice when they're here. So kind of before they start charging you. And so I would go and say, hey, here's the situation we have, you know. What state are you in? Indiana. And they're pretty good about adoptions, you know. Our chef has adopted from Indiana just recently, an infant, but through foster care, you know. So Chef Meg. I'm not sure. Is Bethany in Indiana? Yeah, Bethany. Probably Bethany's here. Are they here? Yeah, go to Bethany. I hear good things about them. I haven't used the agency, but I hear good things about them. Go to Bethany and say, here's our situation. I don't know if that would be a deal breaker, and I don't think it would be, but that's my gut, but... Yes. Yes, sir.
You said before your home study, you moved your guns outside. Now, after that's over, you bring them back and continue with
the always have a gun on me, yes, sir.
But, so the people are doing the home study. There's no, and so they follow, they'll follow up, they find the
No. And weird enough, in the California one, they came back one time, and I didn't have the gun still on property. You know, they didn't even ask that question, you know. It could be, but both of mine did ask that. So I'm assuming it's kind of a pattern, two different states, but maybe not. But in Kentucky, she just kind of glossed over it because everyone carries a gun in Kentucky, you know. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, if you don't have a gun, why wouldn't you? Do you have guns in the house to protect your children? It's a different perspective. In California, that was a huge issue because you got California. They're, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. Which is kind of funny because I'm like the doofus guy. So I go out bow hunting one night and I shoot a deer. And that same week in the church parking lot, someone stole my tailgate off my F-150. So I shoot this deer and I'm just thinking, I'm in Valencia, California, like Los Angeles. And I'm driving back and the deer's head's hanging out the back of the truck, you know, dripping blood. And people are just keep telling me I'm number one. You know, they keep letting me know. And I'm like, what? I didn't even connect with me. I'm in camouflage. My wife's like, you are such a redneck, you know. You know, I'm just like, I didn't even realize, you know. So I drove back in the city thinking, oh, this probably wasn't a good move. You know, people are, anyway. Yeah, because they're $1,500 and they have those little clips. They pop them right off real fast and they sell them for parts. Everything's weird in Los Angeles, you know. Land of fruits and nuts, you know. Yes, ma'am. I didn't at the time in California because they're hard to get. I have that now, but it possibly could, but they didn't. I didn't have my concealed carry when I did Elijah. I hadn't completed it, so I wasn't. Maybe they might now. Now this new one, you just kind of raised an issue with me. I was like, uh-oh. I may have that issue with this new one, you know, in Indiana, but. Yeah. Yeah, safe. You have a safe, a gun safe in the house, which you should anyway, you know, have a gun safe. But in California, they were just, that was the first time that everybody was getting killed on, you know, that was doing it. It was the firearms issue, you know. So, yes, ma'am. Well, you should get rid of it. I mean, because if I'm your neighbor, you have no gospel opportunity with your neighbors if your dog barks all night. Let me just tell you. You know. Well, I'd probably remove the dog. Take him to a neighbor's house, a friend's house or something during the time. They say, you have a pet? Yeah, we have a dog. You know, and it's part, it's here's the deal with social workers. It's all individualized. I mean, they just kind of ask. They have their little shtick they do. Like at our house, we lived in this $5 million mansion in Los Angeles because we were house sitting. And this is the police chief of Los Angeles. He's in Portland, and he's in the United Nations. And so he says, hey, he's in our church. He says, will you watch your house? We're going to be gone like 6 years. We're like, yeah. I mean, I had three floors, gaming rooms. I mean, it's like pimp my house, you know, for pastor. And everybody's coming. They come visit. I could park 100 people in our driveway. So I was like, people come over and say, what does your father do? You know, because they knew I was a pastor. And she was just enamored with the house. I had her stunned. She was, I mean, I could have been a pedophile. You know, and she'd go, oh, great, you know, let me see the chandeliers. You know, she just walked through our whole house, and I was like, oh, gosh. And I paid $3,000 for that, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's what kind of exasperated me a little bit. But so it is very particular to the social workers asking the question, what's the priority there, you know. But I just moved the dog off, and she's, oh, I want to meet the dog, then go get the dog, you know. You typically have two pre and one post, you know. Each agency is a little bit different, but you'll have multiple visits with them. And then they sometimes like collapse the visits, like if it's an expedited, they collapse the two into one for us. So, another question? But if you're like raising rattlesnakes, you probably, you know, need to do something about that. It's a bigger issue theologically, but just, you know, just be cautious. But if the dog barks, definitely take its yapper out for the neighbor's sake, for Jesus' sake, please. I'm trying to help. No, I'm just kidding. Anything else? You guys getting hungry? I asked around, and I immediately said, hey, we got a situation coming up, and I just immediately broadcast it on Twitter, Facebook. Someone says, oh, you going to Alabama? This is a great guy. His name's Jim Stone. He's in Gulf Shores. We are adopting a Gulf. It was just miraculous. And all he does is adoptions. And it's a small town. He's in the seersucker suit at Denny's. It was just stunning to me. I was just like, this is, you know, I'm from Los Angeles. Everything doesn't work there, you know. And I'm just like, wow, it really does work like that down here, you know. So we're eating a patty melt and a Pepsi, you know, doing the deal. You know, I'm just like, we meet the judge and he comes out in jeans, you know, do the final adoption. Oh, just meet me in my chambers, you know. And I was like, okay, are we golfing after this, you know. But, yeah. Well, I hope it's been helpful. Can I pray for you? Pray for lunch? Father, I just pray that you'd give us wisdom, collective wisdom, and direction with our desires to adopt children around the world and even domestically. I pray that you would strengthen our bodies with this food today and that you would use the rest of the afternoon for your glory and for your honor. Amen. Have a wonderful day.